Welcome to Rewire with Brian Coons, a podcast that explores human potential. If this content is useful to you, please rate or share with your friends and loved ones. Welcome to the Rewire podcast. This is episode number 35. I'm here with Zara Cara. Zara is a child and family therapist and a kindfulness coach who helps busy families find peace and joy and raise the most kind and mindful kids they know. I love that. And she's also a mother of two. So thank you so much for being here today, Zara.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. So tell me first, I mean, I think kindfulness coach is very intuitive, but what does a kindfulness coach mean to you?
So really, it's a play on words. It's kind and mindfulness jumbled up together. And for me, it really means focusing on the aspects of self-love and compassion for others, which mindfulness teaches us. But for me, that wasn't necessarily so instant in my interpretation of it. So when I started practicing mindfulness, I first focused more on all of the nitty-gritty of breathing and trying to observe myself. But it wasn't until much later in my journey that I understood the importance. And actually, that's what tied up the whole idea of mindfulness for me, was the idea of self-love and compassion. So when I recognized how important and integral that was to being mindful, I thought to place extra importance on it. And so kindfulness is just, for me, that full 360 of what it takes to really be present in the moment, to not be judgmental, and to really make the most of what's right in front of us before our eyes.
Yeah, that's very cool. And it is fascinating how, when you're on the journey, how over time, sort of the definitions and sort of the way you embody the whole mindfulness thing changes. And it's very simple, yet it's really kind of hard for people to wrap their head around if they've never really engaged in any type of practice.
Yeah, you're right. It's a really subtle thing to pick up on, but it's so profound in how it impacts your ability to engage in the practice in a way that's more fulfilling. And for me, it was really something that it hit home when I understood it wasn't just about finding calm and creating peace, but really embracing all that is and all that I am simultaneously.
Right, exactly, which is a very peaceful thing to do. So it's exciting and rare to speak with somebody who also shares a passion for mindfulness in the kids space as well. And, you know, for me, it's fairly new. I don't think it's new for you, but was your practice always geared towards family and children as a family therapist, or was that something that you got into over time?
Yeah, I began my first job in a child and family mental health facility. So I began in that sector. But prior to that, I did have a few months of experience in addictions, a few months in hospital settings. I worked in a residential care setting as well. But my first real job was in a children's mental health center. And I've always worked with children and families. And mindfulness was a strategy that my supervisor provided to me from the get-go. She asked me if I knew much about it. And I said, you know what, I've learned about it, but it's not a part of my life. So she suggested a few books, encouraged me to experiment. And so I did. And I kind of never looked back, because I saw in a matter of just months, with working with the first families that I worked with, how important it was for them to make the changes they did, and also how they were able to reflect on how significant those changes were, and very simple and, you know, time effective strategies. So I've always worked with this population simply because I realized when I began how much I loved it. And I didn't necessarily get into this space to work with children and families, but it ended up being something that was so fulfilling for me, and it just grew on me. And I've only ever worked with children and families as a result.
Well, amazing. So I guess what a benefit for your children then. You have two young children.
Yes.
As far as your day-to-day interaction with them. Now, how old are your two?
So I have a 27-month-old and a 12-month-old. So okay. Two and one.
Okay, so two and one. So very young. How do you incorporate mindfulness at that age?
So mindfulness became a part of my regular practice only when I got pregnant with my first child. So as much as I'd been teaching it and and sharing it with others, it was more a matter of my professional world. And it wasn't until I got pregnant, actually, and I was dealing with exhaustion and morning sickness and all of those not so fun symptoms of pregnancy, that I thought, hey, you know, like, I've worked with people that have chronic pain and chronic physical conditions who have testified to how life-changing mindfulness is. So I actually only began integrating it into my own life a little over 3 years ago. And I just noticed over a matter of days how visualization, how grounding myself in the present moment totally shifted the pain I was feeling or the discomfort I was feeling. And so it started in a really interesting way for me in terms of how it got incorporated into my life. But I've just maintained it since then. So when I had my first child, I've always been big on self-care, because working in the helping profession, without being able to fill up your own cup, it's hard to provide for others a quality care. So self-care was always something that I spent lots of time and resources on. But soon as I had my first kid, I realized I couldn't engage in activities I used to. So no more weekly massages, no more spending, you know, 3-4 hours at the gym or going out for dinner. I had to find new ways to take care of myself. So it was actually perfect timing that I had started this mindfulness journey during my pregnancy, because I quickly learned how valuable it was for me to get those minutes and, you know, 5-10 minutes here and there before and after I fell asleep, so that I could kind of just find calm in the chaos. And so my child saw me meditating and, you know, practicing yoga and doing all these things from the minute he came into this world. And before he was a year old, we would notice he would mimic my partner and I in terms of meditating and when we were doing yoga. So we would share with him what we were doing without expecting anything from it. But he's now 2 years old and he meditates with us. I don't expect him to stay quiet. That's not the only way to meditate, but he is able to be in the moment. He's able to engage in that more, you know, discursive aspect of meditation in terms of being able to recognize what he's feeling and find ways alongside us with our help to constructively work through those feelings. So he's pretty much been at it from the very beginning. And then his brother was born into a family where his big brother and his parents are big into this now, because we're 3 years in. And he literally started taking deep breaths like before he was a year old, because he would hear us tell his brother every time his brother kind of got dysregulated to take deep breaths. Right. So before he was a year old, it was the funniest thing. We just literally saw him when he would, you know, yell and scream, kind of prompt himself, kind of like we did to his brother. And he would start taking deep breaths. And we got it on video and he shared it with our friends and family. They thought it was the funniest thing. But it shows you how modeling is more important than even teaching, right? Because they see it and it becomes ingrained in their way of understanding the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love that you got into it yourself, you know, during that own difficult time, you know, when you're not able to give yourself that self-love and care. I think that's so important. You know, our children are so damn needy, right? But I mean, yeah, and modeling, that's it. I mean, so when I teach kids mindfulness, I'm secretly after the parents. So I'm always including them in the mindfulness practice and, you know, encouraging them to understand the fact that monkey see, monkey do with this. The kids will model you. So, you know, if you can practice as a family, have a specific place in the home where you can sit together, that they'll just start to pick that up even at a very young age, as you said. So my kids are 7 and 5, you know, so my daughter, she can sit, and my son now at 5, most days on their own, but it's so that's super powerful. Now, in your professional world, what do you work on, a specific age range of children?
Yes, I work with latency age, so from birth to 6 years old. However, as I've shifted from just doing the therapy to the kindfulness coaching, I've kind of expanded that into the preteen years until about 9, 10. So my experience has been that it's the ideal time to start is the minute your child is, you know, conceived, like in utero. But in terms of actually purposefully teaching them, it's around, like, I think the 2, 2.5 year mark, because that's when I've seen children develop enough language skills to be able to comprehend what you're saying, and then to also incorporate that into their doing and into their being. So I work with children primarily that are 0 to 6 years old, but I've also begun to sort of open that up because I do see the need for preteens to, if they haven't already developed these skills, to learn how to become more emotionally intelligent and resilient before they get into middle school, because that's when we know mental health begins to really become more of an issue for young people.
Yeah, so powerful to be able to pick up this skill at a young age. I mean, obviously, we all wish we had started much younger, but it's amazing that kids have an opportunity to learn that now, and it's becoming more mainstream. But there still doesn't seem to be a whole lot of resources available in the mainstream. For people who want to learn more about mindfulness in the family space, obviously they can reach out to someone like yourself. But what other resources are you aware of that that kids and families can leverage to learn mindfulness and practice that?
So I've actually been putting together a list of books that are just like simple board books that you can start reading to a child as early as, you know, a few months old when you begin reading. And a lot of times parents will say, well, you know, my child doesn't understand what mindfulness is about. They're only like 6 months old. And I say, well, does your child really understand anything explicitly at 6 months old? No, but it doesn't stop reading. You still read to them.
Yeah.
Because you want them to develop syntax, right? So you start as soon as you can. So then same way we develop emotional intelligence. And so we want to share those habits like the deep breathing. And there's amazing books. Like one of our family favorites is Breathe Like a Bear, but there's tons of them. Like we've literally got hundreds of books at home that I use with the families I work with and as well as my own children. So I'm going to put together a list and I'll share that. I can share that with you, or I'm also going to be putting it up on my own blog, because that's something that I get asked a lot in terms of like, if I can only buy 10 books, like what are the best books to buy? So books are great, but there's also a lot of channels on YouTube that are popping up with yoga series geared just for kids and mindfulness meditations, guided meditations just for kids. And I find these really helpful because sometimes I think my kids are tired of hearing their mom do everything and be everything. So it also gives me a little break when I can put on like a 5-minute guided meditation for, I do it with my older son really, because a younger one isn't into that yet. But I find that's really effective. And a lot of the families I work with, the parents might not necessarily have time. So this is a way for them to get their kids doing their own thing so that they can do their 5 or 10 minute meditation simultaneously. So I can share those resources with you, but there aren't a whole lot, like you said, because while many school boards are taking, you know, efforts to put mindfulness into the curriculum, they're not really doing a whole bunch in terms of outreach to families. So we know that when something is taught in school, but it's not sustained in the home, that there's a disconnect with children. So we need to do, I think, a better job as a community, ensuring that there's a better communication between the spaces our children spend the majority of their time in at school and at daycare primarily, as well as at home. So everything is kind of in sync and they're getting uniform messaging so that there's really more power to the punch.
Yeah. And that, I think that's one of the biggest challenges, really. I mean, like you mentioned, there is somewhat limited resources, but they're there if you want to find them. Yeah. But I find the biggest challenge for adults, you know, families and children is just creating the habit. You know, creating the habit for long enough that you can notice the benefit, because it's not something that you do once and suddenly a light goes on and the fireworks go off and you're hooked. You know, it's something that you have to practice over time, and some of those practices are certainly not nearly as appealing as their Xbox or riding their bike or whatever it might be. So how do you tackle the creating the habit? Because like you just said, that's huge. I mean, if the family doesn't incorporate it for younger children, if the child doesn't create the habit to do this on a regular basis, there won't be any benefit.
I guess this is where my bias creeps in of why I work with latency age, because when you start from when they're like tiny little things, it becomes a habit. You don't actually have to create a habit. It just sort of, it's the baseline, right? I work with families, of course, that haven't started when their kids were teeny tiny. And it's just a matter, what I found is the most effective is actually incorporating it into habits that already exist. Like we wash our hands, for instance, you know, regardless of what the day looks like, whether it's busy or not. We're going to find ourselves washing our hands, especially now, dozens of times. So with my own boys, what I'll do is we know we have washed our hands for long enough if we've taken five deep breaths, and we do deep breathing while we wash our hands. Or we will point out, you know, three things we can hear, two things that we can feel, one thing that we can smell. Whatever the case is, we incorporate mindfulness literally right into the habits that exist every day. Because for me, I found that was the most effective way to begin. Like I said, I began when I was pregnant, and it was almost a matter of necessity. I'd wake up feeling nauseous, and I knew right then if I didn't take a moment to use visualization that I would have to run to the washroom and vomit. So it was like, it was almost a matter of necessity, like I said, that I incorporated it into routines that already existed. And when I had my kids, I did the same thing, because I had noticed when I was working with families previously that they couldn't create the time. Most families are super busy, and asking them to add one more thing to their plate is almost impossible. So while there are activities that I do ask families to engage in, or I recommend, which take time, but in the long run actually free up more time in our schedule than they take, I do usually try to figure out what their lifestyle looks like, so that I can say, hey, you know, you have a car ride that's 30 minutes. Could you put on this soundtrack, which, you know, might have affirmations in it? And can you maybe use this time while you do food prep to put on a yoga series for your kids if they like physical movement? And so I try to really work with families on a more individual basis when it comes to incorporating those habits, because I don't think many families, unless the parents themselves have felt and experienced the benefits of mindfulness, are so keen on adding more to their plate. So if we already do certain things and we already have those time blocks set aside, it's just a matter of changing how we use that time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That totally makes sense. And that's a great way, I think, to sort of break into people's schedules. Like you said, time is like, seems to be one of the biggest obstacles that people seem to have when it comes to meditation, really. Like, I don't have time. And it's funny that my teachers have always told me, you know, if you don't have time, that means you should be meditating, you know, because yeah. It's so important. So, but yeah, so that's interesting, because, and also, you know, never really thought of that as well, but that's kind of a wise place to start when they're so young, and, you know, you create that sort of, it's not even a habit at that point, right? It's just sort of a lifestyle. And that just becomes their way of being ongoing. I think that's brilliant. What about teenagers? You mentioned up to 13. You said you've worked with, or 12?
Around 10 usually, but I mean,
oh, around 10. Okay.
A few clients, like I could count them on probably one hand. Okay. So not very many at all. I find once youth kind of get to that age where, especially during the teenage years, when, you know, your brain is pruning for like the second time, if those neural circuits haven't really been created, they're unlikely, first of all, to want to make that time, because they don't have the benefit. They don't have the physical experience of what happens when you meditate. Although I have worked with teens that have been very, very much open to doing this, but they're usually of a certain profile. Like, they might not have a lot of friends, or they don't have a lot of, you know, social activities that they engage in. So that's kind of been my experience. I don't have any experiences of very extroverted teenagers holding on to any of the lessons that I've helped to try to share with them. And I think that's simply a matter of they don't know what that experience would feel like, and they can't even imagine it being beneficial. So much like adults, there isn't that neural pathway created to support trying something new. And I find a lot of teens, it's kind of, you know, doing anything that's not social is sort of faux pas. Like, they would rather spend time, which makes sense developmentally, doing things that require engagement and that can give them kind of an affirmation of who they are. Because that's just, again, developmentally where they're at, and they want to be reified by their peers, and they want to know that they belong and that they're needed. And that's totally normal and how things are supposed to be at that age, because we're finding ourselves and figuring ourselves out. So I feel like if parents can find a way to sneak in those lessons before those teenage years hit, it's so crucial, because the way that the brain works, the way that the brain is developing, and the way that we socially develop kind of might counteract the ability to start a habit like mindfulness, or I should say meditation more, but mindfulness maybe can, you know, still be encouraged in terms of parents pointing out to their teens, you know, like, stop, and like, what are you noticing? What are you what do you see? So we could still kind of prompt that behavior, but I think to help ingrain it, we probably are wiser to try starting it younger.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, I have no experience with teenagers myself in that space, but I can imagine that would be a little bit tricky considering the distractions and hormones and all the things like you just mentioned that are happening at that time in their life. Do you have a technique that you like to use? Like, is there a favorite, a go-to? I mean, I guess it would change depending on the age that you're sort of focused on, but is there something that really works that you really like to use in your teaching?
You know what I found, like, I mean, personally I do, but in terms of teaching, no, I'm really effective in my delivery in terms of, I really try to find what speaks to the lifestyle and the strengths and the areas of you know, needing to be worked on with the people that I work with and the families I work with. Cause I find that when it's individualized and it caters to all that, they're more likely to run with it. So I do have visualizations and guided meditations that have a purpose, but then I will cater them, you know, if I have a child I'm working with that's a sports fan, then I'll use sports analogies or sports imagery. If I, you know, work with a child that likes nature, I can put in nature sounds. So I try to really gear it towards them because I find when it speaks to who they are, it really is something that they have a vested interest in wanting to take part in. And I like to have their buy-in because once they feel they were involved in creating these activities, then they really feel proud to execute them. So their confidence in being able to master them increases just by virtue of knowing the subject matter that I will link to the new subject matter. So it's right. Not, I'm not just exploring this brand new concept. Like, I know about music. So if I have, you know, musical themes resonating through this new activity, then I feel a bit more comfortable and it doesn't feel so foreign or so new.
Right. I guess that's a huge benefit of, you know, working one-on-one with the family and the child to really sort of dig in deep and sort of customize something that they resonate with.
Yeah.
Okay. So for yourself then, what about your own personal experience? What techniques do you like to incorporate in your day-to-day?
Visualization. I love visualization. I think at least 2 to 3 times a day, I will just by habit again. So these are times like when I shower, for example, I imagine like I'm in a waterfall and I use that time to really decompress because I usually shower in the morning and in the night. So it's like to get my head in the game and then to sort of relax, that becomes a time for me to, and I love water. So I use that time to ground myself. I also like using visualization when I have, struggles or challenges, because I like to be able to see what I'm going through in sort of a more objective stance. So really using mindfulness to depict what is happening and how I'm dealing with it so that I can see from a, you know, a third person's point of view, like, am I actually in it as deep as it seems? Or are there other routes that I'm not seeing because I'm on the path as opposed to looking down? So visualization's been big for me. And I really enjoy, guided meditations in general, because I find that when I'm throughout the day taking the moments where my children are sleeping to meditate in silence and to sort of just allow myself to be in that moment, I feel like a lot of times I get lost and I'm not necessarily as creative because there's so much going on. So guided meditations allow me to not only learn other people's techniques, but it also helps me to be more creative. I feel like it's almost like a journaling exercise because a lot of the times the prompts make me think about things that might be very different than what I'm experiencing in the moment. So it's a way for me to really expand my thinking and to really be in a place of gratitude. Whereas when I'm kind of stuck in my own day-to-day meditations, I kind of sometimes default to what's more comfortable or what's more, you know, the more common themes that I tend to go towards, which are trying to find a, you know, way to create more love and to share more love. And so I have these themes that I keep defaulting to, but when I'll go on YouTube and I'll see some of the channels I follow have a new guided meditation, it might be a completely new theme, but it's amazing because it allows me to tap into someone else's energy and someone else's thought train.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for the adults listening, I mean, I'm always fascinated by people's sort of daily routines when it comes to meditation. So you mentioned the being in water and the shower. Is that the time that you typically meditate, or do you have a specific time or routine that you follow every day to sort of really lock that down and protect the space to do so?
I do, but having two very young children, time doesn't always work in my favor. So I like to meditate aside from the visualization exercises that I complete in the shower. But if I don't have enough time to exercise, shower, and meditate, then I will meditate in the shower and exercise in the morning, call it a day. If I can't do all that, then I will at least spend, even if it's just 5 minutes in the morning, meditating. I hide out in the room, make sure my kids can't hear me so I can get the best start on my day, because I know that when, like I said earlier, my bucket's full, I'm pouring out and spilling out more love and patience for them, and they're going to benefit. So 5 minutes doesn't hurt anybody. And then throughout the day, I will usually do some form of physical exercise, and it'll be like mindful movement with my kids. And I also then read books to them that I allow each of them to choose one of their favorite books, and then I choose one book. And a few times a week, I'll choose books that resonate with themes that are, I think, important for me in terms of compassion and self-love and self-respect and being kind to ourselves and, you know, mindfulness. And so I choose certain books. And then during those times, we'll also, as a part of our routines, practice what the books are sharing with us. And that allows me to kind of get a break while I'm teaching my kids too. When they go down for a nap, I generally meditate for a second time. If they go down for a nap together, again, that doesn't always happen. And then in the evening, I will usually take half an hour to an hour to practice yoga. And then I finish off my night by showering and meditating. So that's kind of how I inject mindfulness throughout the day. And, you know, it might seem like only 5 minutes here or there, but by the end of the day, I've gotten an hour and a half to 2 hours of time where I'm not racing in the thoughts of what I have to do tomorrow or worrying about what happened yesterday. I'm in the moment, and I get so much out of that, because it's like I feel like my days are longer when I take those little moments here and there to be present in the moment, which is not something that I was used to doing. So time felt like it passed by a lot quicker, and it didn't feel like I got so much quality time as I do now when I take those minutes here and there.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, that's you know, it's huge that first of all, the precious, you know, abundant present moment really is so special. And, you know, so many of us, as you said, are worried about what's coming next or stuck on what happened yesterday or earlier in the day and not being present. But, you know, with the way you sort of outline it there, I think it's powerful. I mean, anybody who has a shower or has, you know, is doing all these things, you're able to incorporate it all and then collectively get over, you know, over an hour of practice a day. That's super powerful. So for people listening who, you know, I know for sure that there are so many people who are interested in mindfulness, you know, they just don't even know where to start. You mentioned books. So if there was just one thing that you could sort of explain to a family on what would be a first step just to start to get down that path, would you suggest the adults start to come up with a practice and kind of lure the kids in through the modeling, or what would you say would be like one thing they could do?
I think depending on the age of the kids, a book that I recommend is, it's called The ABCs of Mindfulness. And it's just a simple picture book. It's like a book that goes through the letters, like much like an animal ABC book would. So A is for anteater, B is for bear, but it's all words related to mindfulness. And I think it's a really great way to introduce the concepts of mindfulness to parents and children simultaneously. Like I said, we all read to our kids, so might as well read books where we're all learning rather than just feeling like the kids are benefiting. And that's what I kind of love about mindfulness books in general. They help us, regardless of our intellectual capacity or age, kind of think about things, because from each point of view, you can learn something new. And that book is really nice because it really clarifies that mindfulness is not just meditation. It's not just, you know, for yogis or people that have abundant time. It's a part of our everyday life. It's about the way that we think, the way that we feel, how we do something with what we're thinking and feeling. And it's how we sort of exist. So there's so many different ways that we can be mindful. And there are so many different aspects to mindfulness that book really does a good job of sharing that with families that might feel like, you know, they're not confident enough to begin teaching their kids. Cause that's the biggest concern I hear from parents is that, you know, I don't know anything about this. How am I going to teach my kids? So I like to help them feel confident by explaining what mindfulness is and how they already are experiencing it throughout their life. Cause most of us are practicing mindfulness without knowing it. It's just a matter of how much we practice or how often we practice. And so, like you've said, making it a habit is one thing, but it exists in all of our lives. And if anyone has ever paid attention to a very young child, they are so mindful. It shows us how innate mindfulness is, right? The way they eat with all their senses, the way that they engage with life, they're being, they're not doing, they just exist and they're happy. Right. To watch a leaf move on a tree, and that excites them. And so when you're in grace, when you're in the moment, you're able to get that same satisfaction. It's just a matter of training our minds to not do what we've been told our whole lives is important, which is planning, analyzing, critiquing, you know, it's just kind of retraining our minds. So I tell families, you know, go get that book. It's available on Amazon. It's available like through various different channels online. It's a cheap book. It's a beautifully illustrated book. And it's a resilient one because it's a hardcover. So it gets used a lot in my house and it's still in good condition. And it's just a simple book that helps you to understand how you could potentially incorporate it into your life. And then once families feel like they understand the definition, I always suggest that they go to a professional like yourself or myself, someone that's sort of well-versed in operationalizing these definitions to help them integrate it into their life. But I think the familiarity and the confidence has to come from within. And that's definitely a book that I think can help families to instill that.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. And Zara, how do people find you or connect with you?
So I'm on Instagram and Facebook. My business is called Kindful Living. And I also have a website, kindfulliving.ca. So website is currently being revamped to include some new offerings. So it's not entirely... all my information is not entirely there right now, but it will be shortly. But please, if anything I've said today resonates with you or you have a question or comments or wondering anything, you can reach out either on Facebook under my business page. Like again, I said that was Kindful Living, or my personal page. My name is Zara, Z-A-H-R-A, last name is Kara, or on Instagram. And on Instagram, we have an underscore between Kindful and Living because Kindful Living was taken. So that's how to reach me.
Zara, I want to acknowledge you for the important work that you do. We absolutely share the same purpose and mission. And I just wanted to share to close just a quote that I found on your website that I really, really loved and resonated with. And it's time to teach our children that being mindful and compassionate towards ourselves and others is just as important as, if not more than, getting good grades and preparing for the future. I totally resonate with that. I think that's amazing. And keep up the good work, and let's hope we can affect the next generation with this movement.
Of course, it was a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for having me on your show.
Have a great day. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Bye.